It's Tuesday, July 7th, 2015, and you're listening to episode 371 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 41 minutes. Welcome to Fear...
It's not you, it's me. I love it.
Keep the pet. Let's just go. That's awesome.
All right. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is John.
Still Wayne. I mean, Chad.
And my name is Pat.
Yeah. And look, I went through all this, and now your guys' levels are all over the place.
Oh, it's beautiful. Whatever, look at that. It's just, it's like a work of art.
People's levels being all over the place is part of our episode.
I've made some impressionism paintings that look a lot better than that, but that's pretty impressive.
So this is what, take 8, I think?
Four.
That looks like my EKG after 9 white castles.
Oh, snap.
So, two announcements. First off, Sojourn Volume 3 is currently being constructed. If you are interested in submitting a story for publication, Sojourn Volume 3, I will link you something in the show notes. It's a set of submission guidelines. They're very simple. It's pretty straightforward stuff. It's not some big Nazi-esque sort of... It's not some...
Kafka-esque.
Wow, yeah. Nazi-esque? What?
It's Kafka-esque.
Kafka-esque is better.
Well, yeah. I don't know. The Nazis are also...
He was German,
but their bureaucracy worked. That's the whole thing of Kafka-esque. It's just so crazy.
Yeah. So it's not that. But there are some submission guidelines in terms of story length, things like that. But if you're interested in getting a bit of short fiction into Sojourn, then please follow the link in the show notes. Check out the submission guidelines and get your submission in. Pretty soon. I mean, we've got a little bit of time, but don't dally on this for like the next 2 months, because if you want to get in, we do have to close off the submission process here relatively soon. All right. Second announcement. Chad, you said there's something going on the forums you want to draw attention to.
Yeah. Gyro LC or Euro LC. I never got quite clear on which one he goes by.
I think it's Gyro.
It's got to be Gyro. He told me he named it after one of his characters.
Let's just start calling him Shawarma instead.
Shawarma. So Shawarma LC.
LLC.
LLC. Shawarma LLC is doing a thread on our role-playing game forums that is a collaborative adventure building project where basically he says, okay, we're going to make this adventure for a role-playing game. We're all going to do it together. We're going to do it like piece by minuscule piece together. For example, he would say, okay, well, this adventure needs a bad guy. Give me an example of a bad guy. And then there's like guidelines on what you do. And so people type up like one sentence. And sometimes it's not even a sentence. Sometimes it's like a fragment of a concept of the bad guy is a mad scientist, or the bad guy is an insane dictator, or the bad guy is the Queen of England, but she's really a lizard person, which is true.
Anyway, yeah, it is.
Completely true.
Are you running a fiction game or what?
Right.
Yeah.
And so people would like submit these ideas. Some would submit more than one. And then he would take them as like, okay, over the next couple of days or whatever, we're going to vote. So, and not do a poll, but this is all in one thread of which one everyone wants. And it's like they do a ranked thing with it. Then he takes how people have ranked them, and I'm not sure this is all back-end stuff that I am unaware of how he does it, and then he takes the winner from that category. So if the majority of people ranked the Queen of England, but she's really a lizard person, as the winner, well, that is now the bad guy of the story. And then they go on and on and on and on, creating the different aspects of this adventure and through the plot. And they've been doing it for a little while now, and it's pretty cool. I submitted a couple of ideas and none of them won.
But well, that makes sense.
I envision that his decision technique involves a chicken named Clucky and corn.
And corn. And a target.
Yes.
There's a game that has that organically. I think it's called like Youth in Revolt or Young Punks or something. And the PCs as a group come together with the GM and decide aspects of the setting and the villain before it even starts. I've played in such a campaign. It was D&D. It was fun.
Wilderness of Mirrors is a lot like that, too.
Don't they do that in a couple of Fate games as well?
Probably.
Well, you make a city in
which would it.
But I don't think you define your own villains in Fate.
Right. Well, you can in Dresden, you can, because you collaboratively come up with the people who populate, the movers and shakers who populate the city.
Yeah.
And those could be bad guys. But in Wilderness of Mirrors, it's a spy sort of, not quite heist game, but it's a spy espionage game. And you all create exactly what is going on, and then they have to deal. And each time somebody comes up with a concept of, well, what are we trying to do? We're trying to steal back a Broken Arrow. And it's like, okay, well, you get a D6. And it's just like, okay, well, where's the Broken Arrow at? Well, it's in Chicago. Okay, Dan, you get a D6. But it doesn't go around. And then John might say, and Libyans, because you're really like Back to the Future.
Whoa, yeah.
Libyans took it.
Oh, my God. Oh. They found me.
And then he gets a D6. And then you start collaborating, you run out of D6s to create the adventure with, and you have this big pile of D6s. And then you use those throughout the game. But every time you use a D6, like, it's like, okay, roll to shoot this guy. Okay, no problem. D6 or maybe a couple of D6. Boom, I shot him. The game master takes those D6 that you roll and sets them aside, and you don't get them back. So your pile of D6s that you need to do stuff with is dwindling as you go through this adventure that you've just made. So by the end of it, you're getting, like, really desperate, and things become very, very risky as it goes on. But that's Wilderness of Mirrors, and not Euro LLC's.
I know, I'm totally
Shwarma LLC.
Shwarma, yeah, I you've lost me there.
Yeah. Okay. So that sounds fun. What's next, Dan?
Okay. We'll put a link to the thread in the show.
So if you want to participate in Shwarma LLC's collaborative adventure building thing, yes, we'll put a link to that in the show. It's a pretty cool sort of forum game going on. All right. So we got a couple topics here. They seem to all be related to
problems.
Yeah, group dysfunction. I don't know if I want to quite go that far, if that's exactly the phrase I want to use, but I think it's what I'm going
to
run with.
Something next door to group dysfunction.
Chad, come on. Chad's taking his clothes off.
Damn it, Chad.
He's stripping again.
You know I can't compete with that hair. That's true. You're the only one I can't beat.
That's awesome.
You've never met Dan's brother. Tex.
Except Tex. Yes, I know. Tex once killed a mech by shooting him with a pistol. Now that we're done with that story, what's our topic, Dan?
Tex once killed a man with his chest hair.
Yes.
You know, I'm a hairy guy, and people make fun of me all the time. It's like, oh, you're a bear.
I make fun of you out of envy.
Oh, it's a Wookiee, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I am very warm in the winter. I'm very soft. Ladies like run their hands through the hair, but people make fun of me, and it doesn't bother me because I'm like, I've seen Tex without a shirt on.
Yes.
And it's just like, you cannot see the skin underneath the solid mat of hair. He is that hairy. So it's just like, your jokes are meaningless to me. They ring so hollow because you do not know. You just don't know.
So first one, John, being the group dad, explain what you mean by that and what your situation is.
Okay, so what I mean by being the group dad is...
Oh, we totally could have done this episode for Father's Day.
We could have.
And it could have been like all...
And we can just save it.
Well, let's just save it for next year, yeah.
50 weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
But the group dad has to do all the cat herding. The group dad is frequently the PC that everyone just reports to and waits on for problem solving, or sometimes he's the permit GM. You may look around and realize that on the day of the game, no one is even talking to one another unless you start to talk to them, and then you will realize that you are the group dad. I think the group dad can be good in some situations. If there's someone who really likes taking that level of charge, if you have a bunch of really, really passive players, which we're going to get onto in more detail in a minute. But I found recently that I had become the group dad without really wanting to be the group dad.
Not every group has a group dad.
No, yeah. A lot of groups are very multipolar. Yeah.
It shouldn't. A group, in my opinion, shouldn't have a group dad.
I don't like being the group dad. No. And I found that I was the group dad. And after the fourth week in a row of cancellations for multiple absences, I just said, guys, I'm not going to be the group dad anymore. Like, it's the meta herding of you people is more annoying net-net than the next best thing I could be doing on Wednesday night with my gaming time. So I'll be playing Europa Universalis 4. One of you guys has an idea and y'all want to get together, you got my phone number, but I'm laying down the shepherd's crook.
Yeah,
and so far I've heard nothing.
Yeah, I mean, the group dad is not just somebody who they schedule the game, they pick the game, they pick what everyone's going to play. They tell people, you know, it's like, okay, we'll kind of make your character like this. Okay, well, we need a healer. Okay, you're going to be the healer. And he also does in-game things where he's like, okay, well, this is the plan,
guys.
And the reason why he does it is because the players aren't doing anything themselves.
I think those are two different topics.
Yes, that's what I was going
to
say.
And I was going to offer in somewhat modest or perhaps a faux modest perception of what's going on when someone is the group dad. It may be a general sign of disinterest. They may be too nice to say that they're not liking the game or something else has grabbed their attention or whatever. It could just be a sign that it's not time to have that game anymore or reconfigure the group to the people who just show up. But sometimes they act like they're really gung-ho, like more than courtesy demands, and they want to be part of a gaming group, and they like the idea of being in this campaign, and everyone agreed on it, and blase, blase, blah. But when push comes to shove the afternoon of the night of the game, you have a hell of a time getting half of them to show up. And then it's just like, ugh,
yeah, and
man.
Something I want to emphasize there is that the group dad, 90 some odd percent of the work they have to do, it's not during the game. It's between the games.
Yes.
It's, are we going to get together? Who's available? Can we game missing one or two people? Are we going to do anything at all? And John, my history with this, I was the group dad for years, and it seemed to be a function of the group dad was always the GM. And since I tended to GM more often than not.
Yes.
And
it is often, but not always.
Yes. And when there were other GMs, at least within that particular group, they were not very organizationally minded people. They were kind of more scatterbrained. They just didn't have the gumption to get out there, crack the whip and see what was going on. And so I played this role for years. I did it for a time, I guess, because it's just the way I'm wired to already do this on my own anyway.
Yeah, you and I are both organizers.
But there came a point where I just got so freaking burnt out on it after doing it for so long. I'm just like, I'm not doing this anymore. If people want a game, I'm not going to be the one to try and figure out where we're gaming and what we're doing. And one of the things that really pissed me off was everybody had a reason to veto my ideas, but to hell if they would ever step up and take any initiative themselves. And now that,
meaning what game to play, what campaign to play?
Oh, everything. What day to play it on, where to play it, what to do.
Oh, no. See, I got no... That doesn't even start to fly with me.
Right. And I haven't really seen that. At least, I don't know, maybe it goes on and I'm not observing it. But as someone who's at least loosely involved that Wednesday group...
No. That's not what happens.
Yeah, I've never seen anyone vetoing.
They don't poop on each other's ideas. They don't poop on my ideas. They just don't show up in significant enough quantities that it is obnoxious and prohibitive to running a game.
How do you solve this? Obvious advice that comes to mind is you don't do it.
Yes.
I mean, you just say, look, I have too much going on. I have a limited amount of emotional and social bandwidth. If you guys can't find it in yourselves to care enough to take any initiative, then I'm just not going to do it. But is there something more that we could say on the subject? Is there another approach to this?
This abuts the variety of solutions, all varyingly annoying and socially problematic, that are available to you if you're in a gaming group that you don't like. Penny Arcade recently did a comic about this, where there's like a Tinder for D&D players, and Tycho's group tells him that they're not playing that night, and he gets on it and signs up with another one anonymously, and it's them. So, like, do you just put the kibosh on the group and stop RPGing for a while? Do you actively find another group? Do you try to pare down your group to the three people who show up every time?
You know, I've ran into this before where it seems like I may be the only one doing something. I realize that is part of my personality. I'm very go, 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 do, do, do. Let's stop talking. Let's just go and do.
Yeah.
But I've had it before where I've had the perception is like, you know, nobody's really taking part in the game. It's kind of hard to get people to schedule to come out and doesn't really seem to be flying. And I've floated the idea before of like, is everybody really feeling this? I mean, because maybe we should change it up or do something different or break it up. And then I've had it to where everybody's like, what are you talking about? This is the best game ever. This is great.
Right.
Everyone's loving it.
Saying.
It's just like, then why am I the only one who's excited to be alive here?
that was a proposal I brought up with this particular incident and not on the mics, but you just did now. Mm-hmm. Question one might be, do we want a new campaign? Do we want a new GM? If it's not engaging enough for people to carve out and show up, then maybe a change of what you're doing helps. If it is honest to God, I'm planning a wedding, I just had a kid, I'm flying every third week. All things that are actually happening or have recently happened in the group that I'm talking about right now. There are times when switching what you're doing will not save you. But in terms of general disinterest, I usually find that rolling up new characters, doing a new template, picking a new GM, et cetera, et cetera, tends to kick a little life into a group in a way that asking people to show up for the ninth session of a campaign doesn't do. I mean, how often is Spider-Man an origin story reboot movie? Every two movies? Every three? People love the beginning, and they hate the indefinite middle. And so, yeah, Chad, I think going to the group, especially if you're the GM, in humility with upturned hands and saying, all right, guys, I am willing to give up the seat if this is not really that much fun.
Yeah.
And really meaning it and promising and following through on that promise not to get butthurt if they say, yeah, I'm tired of this campaign. That's a step one.
I was in a situation with my Sunday group. Actually, Pat and I had the conversation. This was like a year or so ago where, I mean, I was just not feeling the game. I was running it and it's just like, I really thought it was a good idea and it very well might be a good idea, but I'm just not really feeling it and running it. And I went to Pat and I was like, Pat, you know, I'm not feeling it. You know, maybe we should pick a new game. And I think you guys are fine. And it's me, it's not you, blah, blah, blah. And you were like, oh, thank God. Because we were going to tell you today that, hey, you're great. It's us. It's not you. We're not feeling it. Maybe we should do something different. Yeah. And you guys were very much like, hey, we don't want to hurt your feelings, all right? I mean, everyone hates rejection. Mm-hmm. Everyone hates to be told that the thing that they're doing is not that great. But I think that you hit the nail on the head where you have to approach it with humility and say, you know, not every idea is worthy.
Yeah.
Not every idea.
And it's harder to do that as a player than
it is. I think it's extremely hard to get that communication going because that very reason, because everyone sort of, no one wants to hurt anybody else. You don't want to, mm-hmm. you don't want to piss anybody off or step on feelings or whatever like that. So that's what it had with us. Like, we're just not feeling the game.
Right.
And I think in that sense, it was also a reflection of, we were feeling it from you, not knowing that you weren't. We thought you were really into it, but it's like, this game just ain't gelling. It just is not. But I think in retrospect, you know, looking back, I think we were probably, you know, getting that sense from you as well. And it was sort of feeding into it. And I think, that's just what you need to do. I think every once in a while, you just need to sort of take a step back and ask, especially if you've got problems like we talked about where it's obvious, like, hey, okay, what's going on? Let's talk about this. What do we need to do? Do we need to change something up or whatever? But it's hard to approach.
I want to tack this from the opposite side. If you're listening to this and you are a player in a campaign and you're kind of in that situation where you show up, you contribute, you're not disruptive or anything like that. You're a good player all around, but you're not doing a whole lot of that work between the weeks. You got to understand that the game master is putting him or herself out there by writing the game, by doing the performance of putting on the game, by taking on that.
I'm working so hard by making you guys write the game.
Hey, and Chad,
you guys do the
some of us decide things and prepare material.
Yeah, exactly. Not all of us are just kind of a refractive mirror for the rest of the group.
We use Hero Lab and Donjon, but we do work a little bit.
Yeah. And so I want you to think about what's going on there. And when each week you don't really attempt to organize it, you don't take up any of that slack, you don't show any interest in the game, you are sending a message to that game master, whether you intend to or not. And so I want to say to those of you who are on the other side of this equation, would it really kill you to show some interest and some initiative and say, I love this game, let's make sure everyone's available. And if not, I'll take it on myself to try and figure out how we can work around this and whatever. Don't sit there like a damn baby bird just waiting for the GM to do everything, including the social organization aspects of this game.
I think if your group is running into that and everyone's into it, but you're having trouble keeping it organized and such, online tools are great. You know, Facebook is really big and evil and horrible and everybody hates Facebook and everyone's too good for social media, even though everyone is already on Facebook and uses it all the time. Facebook's tools to run a game are excellent, and I think that they're better than Obsidian Portal. You can create a group in Facebook, and it's totally free. You can make the group completely private, invite only the people you want into it, and the stuff that you post in there doesn't show up publicly. It has a calendar function. You can upload files. You can do all this sort of stuff. And you can set up calendar events like, okay, well, we're going to game on this day, and then we're going to game on that day. And then people will get alerts through that. And say somebody doesn't use Facebook, well, they can make an account, not friend anybody, make the account super private, not put in any personal information, just join that group and set it up to where Facebook will email them event alerts when the group puts them out. And I love leaning on Facebook to do that. Not that Facebook really needs me to promote them, but it's a tool. It's a very good tool, an online tool. And Obsidian Portal is somewhat like that. I've used Obsidian Portal a little bit, and I have to say that I really don't care for it. I find the interface to be very clunky. It has a wiki, which Facebook does not, but there's only two people who use the wiki on Obsidian Portal. The obsessive compulsive guy and the obsessive compulsive guy. The guy who just takes all the notes, knows everything, might not be the game master.
Yeah, but the wiki can be a nice, flat, democratic means of communication outside the game.
Yeah, I'm not sure it'd be quite so harsh on City and Portal.
Yeah, I like the wiki.
But what I would say, I think, is one thing Facebook has going for it is there's a good chance the bulk of your group's already there.
Right.
Obsidian Portal, it's hard to say. I mean, if they're big into online gaming, they probably already have an Obsidian Portal account. But we may not even be talking about an online game. This could be a face-to-face game. And there's a much greater chance they've already got a Facebook account and already check all that stuff.
Well, and, you know, not just Facebook or Obsidian Portal. I mean, Google, you can use Google Calendars, Google Docs, all their integrated platforms and stuff. And you can do all of this work online.
Google Drive is nice for RPGs.
Yeah, Google Drive is really freaking awesome. Google Hangouts and that sort of thing. I mean, the whole point here is not which one is better, but it's more let technology do some of that work for you. As far as like scheduling and getting the word out, because really that's what the group dad does. It's not that he or she schedules things and does that. They get the word out. They get the message to you. Creating the message is not the... Well, Dan, did you just shoot somebody?
Yes.
Yeah, for our audience at home, it's almost the 4th of July here in the United States, which was when freedom was created on the planet Earth. And we blow things up outside in celebration of that. So even though it's 5 days away, we're in a very what we call red part of the state.
Yeah,
which is full of the love of country.
Fourth of July,
things are exploding.
No joke, 4th of July is about a month long season.
Yes,
it starts in early June and ends in early July. And by early July, I don't mean July 4th, I mean like July 10th. So the booms you're hearing, that's just people shooting off fireworks and firecrackers in the street outside my house. So, anyway, second subject we're going to talk about tonight, since we got John here, which given his flight schedule is a somewhat hit and miss sort of thing.
He is a flight risk, yes.
I am literally a flight
risk. He is a flight risk in a very different sort of way.
Yeah.
I'm a flight certainty. I fly 7 times a month on an easy month.
We got one here from Chad, which we might get to, but if not, we can do it next week because there's a much greater chance Chad will be around than John.
I will be in Bermuda. San Francisco. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
a good pull.
Bring some water.
I forgot about that.
Lord, you can sell it for a fortune.
Yeah, I know, right?
I'll bring less than 4.3 ounces or whatever it is, and I'll just...
There you go.
And
people will
space it
your
out.
Water.
Yeah.
That'll be awesome.
All right, so John, second topic, go.
Okay, the second topic is what to do in your group, regardless of your role, if there is only one PC that is taking an active role and doing things. This was a discussion that churned up on the RPG subreddit a while ago that I tucked away in my old topic bank. Because the conventional wisdom, and this is a conventional wisdom, no Pat.
Yeah, I don't have room for a topic bank.
Yeah, I'm sure you don't. But the conventional wisdom, which I suspect we on the show and possibly even I myself have dispensed before, is players who show up and don't say anything and don't do anything are harmless. This wisdom can be found all across the gaming internet. It can be found in various Dungeon Master's guides. There is a breed of player out there, maybe you're out there listening to it right now and it's you, maybe it's not, that loves going to RPGs, sitting in the back, and doing nothing. And I'm not necessarily talking about the people that just show up and play Facebook on their phones the whole time and ignore you. That's kind of a supplemental related problem. I'm talking about the people who actually want to be there, but don't actually want to speak at any point when it's not their turn in the initiative.
They're
around.
Enjoying the hell
exactly.
of the evening.
They might
not disruptive.
Right. They're not disruptive below a certain threshold.
Right.
I am going to proceed to argue that if they are a majority of the group, they actually are disruptive by inaction. Because
nothing is happening.
Because nothing is happening. Because you're frustrating two people. The game master and the one player that's actually moving
things.
Well,
I think it's worse than nothing is happening because of what you just said right there, which is from a game master standpoint. When I've been in these situations, you know, I want to involve everybody's character. I want to make sure they have a meaningful place in the game world, because if they don't, I'm kind of screwing them over and I can't really blame them for not participating. So I take a look at what they've got going on. I take a look at when they're getting quiet and maybe shift the spotlight to them. And then when I get nothing in return, there's suddenly these massive holes left in the game where their actions, their contributions, their background should be figuring into things. And it's not.
Right. And we're not talking, oh, one time when I was the GM and I gave them no plot nuggets and I asked them if they wanted to do anything in the tavern or on the spaceship, they didn't have anything to do. Like, who cares about those scenes? We're talking about consistent day-to-day, put the secret science lab right in front of their eyes, called back their ex-girlfriend slash landlord on her magical dragon who showed up at the exact worst time and it was time for them to react. And then their response is consistently either, well, I don't know what happens next, or I go to the PC that actually does things, tell him about it, and wait for his instructions.
Yeah. We had my dead grandmother who raised me as a child, and it's all in this background. The game master has brought her back, and she's a skeleton, and she's the big bad. What do you do?
Well, I don't know what happens next. My turn in combat? Like right.
I had this happen in a game with John where it was like, what do you do?
Guess who was the one person who was not the wallflower?
What do you do? PCA? Crickets.
Yeah.
Non-committal. What do you do, PCB? Crickets. Non-committal. If I was like, all right, it, John, what are we doing?
Yeah. I believe you you made me the commanding officer in the middle of the stream.
No. Because
there was an RP reason for it, but you actually did it.
But let me...
I started as a unranked grunt.
Yes.
And instantly got field commission despite no one above me dying.
Right. God's honest truth here. God's honest truth on what happened in that scene. There was nothing meta going on. So to give a setup here, Battletech game, John is grunt.
Yes.
Okay,
I am mech warrior, the lowest rank of person that can get into a cockpit.
He was not the commanding officer. He was not the executive
officer.
Yeah, it wasn't an officer. And I normally do not ever involve major named NPCs in my games, meaning like if you play Forgotten Realms with me, you're not going to see Elminster. Okay, and I have a whole list of reasons
then
why.
Why would I ever play Forgotten Realms with you?
It's not even really Forgotten Realms, really. I mean, come on.
Then it's Remembered Realms.
Yeah.
But
it's just fucking Realms.
And maybe I know I
fucking Realms, an RPG by Pat.
I'd play that game.
So
you've written it.
I do play that game.
All right. But so what do you do? I walk into the inn. Well, what's in the inn? A big fucking wizard who's fucking a dragon.
I wasn't thinking on the term it used for emphasis. I was thinking of it used as a verb.
It will be.
I was right there with you. I was playing Pat running like, his setting.
Oh, so it was a dragon who was in Flagrante Delicto. Okay.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
It's like a Honey Pop MMO.
We need Wayne for that.
I know.
Anyway, Dan, so you were running Natasha Kerensky like a total lamer.
So the point being that, I normally would not do it. I felt it worked in that one game. And in a future show, I'd like to dissect why I think it worked and some of the things I used to handle her as an NPC. So I involved Natasha Kerensky. For anyone who doesn't know Battletech, she is arguably the biggest marquee name of the Battletech fiction. If she's not the top, she's certainly within the top 10 or top 20. Okay,
she's certainly within the top two.
Yeah, so she's way up there. And I actually tried to steer the group toward a different direction, but I gave them the option of they could have tried to fall in with Wolf's Dragoons, and ultimately the only group from Wolf's Dragoons, which is a mercenary unit that was present, was Natasha Kerensky's group. And so they ended up working under her. And I had no script for how this all was supposed to go down. I had just kind of thought about, well, how do I want to handle her personality? What kinds of things is she going to do? And the biggest thing she was looking for when I was playing her is she wanted decisiveness and action. She just wanted people who believed in themselves and were going to waffle and pussy around, whatever. And she went and started talking to the group, and the person that was supposed to be in charge just would not give her a definitive answer on anything. It was just kind of this like scraping and silence and whatever. And this went on and on and on. Finally, she gets to John's character, and John's character gave her, in her mind, the wrong answer, but he gave an answer and he stood by it. And she's like, fine, you're in charge now because you're the only person that I could trust to actually do something. And that was not a metagame moment. I did not set out in that game with the intention of shifting the rank structure within the group. I really thought that once she, in fact, I was kind of using her to get them off the wall.
I thought you were.
Because I figured if she gets up in their face and starts telling them in no uncertain terms, let your balls drop and say something, that maybe they'd get the hint and at least fake it for a couple.
But that's not why they showed up. The reason why they showed up is to watch a game as if you were watching your favorite TV show.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's what it is. It may be a failure to understand motivation. That in my thinking, if you're being quiet, the problem is either you're shy or somebody else is hogging the spotlight.
Yeah.
Having Natasha Kerensky get up in your face and demand an answer, you know, and she wasn't super threatening. She was assertive, but she wasn't threatening. This would draw out somebody who's in one of those problems. But I think you're right, Chad. I think I misdiagnosed the problem.
Right.
What strikes me is that the examples that we're talking about here are extreme in the fact that you're basically talking about a group that's composed of all people like this except for one.
Yes, they are extreme, and I'm
right.
using
and
the
so
extreme.
So what I want to ask and what I want to sort of try to focus on is what about when you just have one player in a group that's this way?
I think
because
that's
it's
harmless.
A whole different thing.
Yeah,
I think we're like if you've got a situation where it's all like that except for one person, you're kind of up creek without a paddle. That's it's a bad thing. I, right. I don't see.
And then we're discussing how to change them or motivate that. But yeah. No, I would certainly suggest that the conventional wisdom of my party of six people has a cleric that doesn't talk very much. That's fine. Mm-hmm. You don't have to make it your mission as a GM or a fellow player to find your shyest people and, you know, rip their fingernails out until they start initiating an RP.
Yeah.
I'm framing this discussion as a majority, perhaps even all but one of a smaller group, are really just waiting to be told the story. And you are there as the GM or as the one player character who is talking, and it's really frustrating you. And what?
So I guess a question I would have along those lines is this a systemic problem in that group where it happens no matter what game you're playing?
No.
Or is it just, this is not their game? Like
that
Battletech, I'm not into it. I
right.
don't care. It's just not my thing. So I'm checking out.
Everyone knew the setting. I don't know if they were totally in love with it. I mean, we opened the field. There were probably a half dozen games proposed by three different GMs, and we came together on Battletech. But you do make an important qualification, because the problem is different if you have players who never talk campaign to campaign, game to game, versus players who are varyingly but involved, but not silent, largely, suddenly all shutting up. You know, I would say of that cast, we had four PCs there. One of them is continuously very quiet. Two of them are middle of the road to even intermittently crazy. But in that
like
context,
fun crazy.
Yeah. Oh, great, yeah. Great assets gotcha. To have, not wallflowers,
gotcha.
Movers of the plot, even when they're doing something crazy that is perhaps not the objectively smartest thing, but their character would do it. Good people to have around.
Mm-hmm.
But for that 3 months or whatever it was, oof. It was just, okay, what do you do? And the only answers were nothing or, oh, I got to tell John about that.
Well, right. And I would expand on that a little to say that while certainly does not seem to be equal across all campaigns, I'm having a little trouble coming up with the consistent factors, because I also saw it in the prior campaign, which was not Battletech, which was not sci-fi, which was not something that I was GMing, and yet we had fundamentally the same issue.
I think in the situation that John's describing with this one, in this particular group, is that I think if you get into a campaign where that happening to that degree, I say you give it, you see it, you give it one or two sessions and it's still not clicking. I think it's that point where you just have to punch out and say, this campaign is just not working for our group because no one is interested. No one is committing. No one's doing anything except for one person.
Yeah.
And that's it. You know, now, now, Dan, because you sort of had a comment, it's like, that's not the best advice for every single group, because sometimes it is multiple campaigns across different genres. You still have that same problem, or maybe it rotates from person to person. But
I came up with two bits of advice or possible solution here. The first of which is not very good, and the second of which is not very good, but I think the second may be a little better than the first.
The lesser of two evils.
Yeah, very much so. And the first one is you might want to try just changing up the campaigns to find something that excites these people more. If you can find something that excites them, if you can find some kind of formula, which I'm not convinced is even possible, then go for it.
Well, especially if they're saying, are you guys enjoying the campaign? I'm not really feeling it. Maybe I should have. And they're like, this is the best campaign ever. I'm having great fun. And their great fun is them sitting there in silence.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and even if you do find something that motivates them, what is that all you're going to do?
Right.
I mean, for the rest of forever.
Yeah. As a GM, devoting your energy to finding that tiny little spot behind their ear that you can scratch to make them do anything is really boring and
so
stressful.
The only other solution that I came up with outside of the extreme of just say, look, this whole makeup of this group isn't working, punch out, is possibly try changing up the lineup of the group a little bit, saying, I don't know, maybe, depending on how many people there are, maybe we'll keep all of you, but at the very least, we're going to add another person or two that we can count on to be really boisterous and proactive, because I think if you can get at least three people instead of just two, well, now it's no longer a GM and a lone wolf, or even if the GM's one of the quiet people and the players, but you got three of them. You're not just having two people dialogue in the same rut over and over and over again.
That's true. And that's a solution we could have tried. Search our farm of people we've played with for someone we know is quite more bombastic and put them in the group and just see if that agitates some activity. That's something we could have done.
Or even if it doesn't, it just creates enough activity that the wallflowers just sort of become a rounding error.
Yeah, it certainly would have been more fun for me, and I'm sure more fun for you as the GM if there was even one more person in the game who was fighting back with the story and investigating things.
I will
call
back to some of our previous advice of myself and Adam Gottfried, alpha players. We did an entire episode on alpha players. I think when you have a sort of group dad or the one player who's doing anything, that's not good. There's no long-term happiness to that. You need an alpha player, somebody who grabs the spotlight and takes it, and then also grabs that spotlight and shoves it on other people. And whether they
tried doing that, but oh man, they fought back, dude. Yeah, you can give people the spotlight, but they might not move anywhere.
Well, and I think the problem that you'll face with that too is you have to be careful with that, because if you have players that are sort of shy like that to begin with, which to me that's what we're dealing with here, is that they're the wallflower types, that they're a little bit shy.
Mm-hmm.
An alpha player, if you're too alpha, it's just going to...
Can you be too alpha? Well, yeah,
exactly.
No, you can't.
Exactly. If you're Chad, you're just... I mean, it's not that you're hogging the spotlight to be a dick. Well, in your case, you are. But anyway, you're so alpha. It's going to intimidate them. And even when you shine the spotlight on, they're just going to be like, they're going to lock up.
Yes.
You're going to vapor lock
them. This happened one time I can remember in this campaign. One of our characters, as the platoon leader or whatever, I took it upon myself to assign an NPC that had to be piloted by a character to one of the wallflowers, and she simply refused.
Oh, wow.
Like, I don't want to do that. Well, I order you to.
She was like, as in my character doesn't want to do it.
No.
She was like, I don't want to.
She told me she would not do it, and she wouldn't do it. Huh. So that doesn't always work.
Yeah, it's like when you have such diverse approaches to the game and characters, I think that, you know, going to those extremes, like the ultra alpha with these, you know, the ultra wallflowers, it's just not going to, I don't think it's going to help. Maybe sometimes it does, but I think it's just going to be,
I'm with you, Pat.
The alpha's going to run the show, and we're going to be more entrenched in our wallflowerness, and we're going to sit back and just watch.
Yeah, I agree, Pat. I don't think we need an alpha. We just need a participant.
Yes. Yeah. One more participant.
Yeah,
we need to make this politics instead of a one relationship by adding a third spoke.
I mean, I think this is a hard situation all around. I mean,
there's
no
perfect solution.
There isn't. There's no perfect solution. And there's just a lot to this that's like, and every case is going to be different. So if you're struggling with this kind of thing, I hope something we've said is maybe helpful for you, because I don't see any clear cut good answer for any of this.
The hammer solution, if it's all converging, which in my case it did, both being the group dad and the one guy who was moving and shaking, was, as I said, to say, All right, dudes, someone else wants to pick this ball up, I'll kick it with you, but I'm not going to kick it with myself anymore. And yeah. If that results in radio silence for long enough, find another group.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, there's no need to fight or cry or
there's no big deal. It's there. Just... there could be totally legitimate reasons. There are legitimate reasons in this group. There is major life crap happening to two-thirds of us.
Absolutely.
I don't hold it against anyone, but... I only have so many hobby nights to ration off. I certainly have less of them if I'm running.
Mm-hmm. Life's too short.
Yeah, life's too short. It's nothing not to get your panties in a wad over. Yeah. Just game.
We've got another topic or two to talk about here, but I'm not sure we can fit them into the length of this show. So I think we're going to hang on to them for next time. So I want to thank you guys, of course, for tuning in. Be sure to check the show notes. We'll have a link there for the Sojourn 3 submissions and also for Shawarma LLC's online collaborative adventure thing.
You know, I'm probably not doing it justice when I explained it, especially when I stopped talking about it and started talking about Wilderness of Mirrors, which is totally unrelated. But it
is cool. What he's doing
is really cool.
What he's doing is cool. It's collaborative. It's a lot of fun. So, yeah, be sure to check the show notes for all those links. And otherwise, thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great week and great games. And we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2015. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.